And so if you can dig into your client base, figure out how to connect people, help promote what people do, and then come up with really creative ideas, you'll number one, look at like a trusted advisor because you are advising them. And number two, it helps your clients stay in business longer.
Okay, welcome back, gang, for episode 93 of Future Proof. Bill Sheridan here. And first things first, how are you? I hope you are well. I hope your friends and loved ones are well. Hope you're safely isolated or at the very least socially distant. I hope you're managing some semblance of a normal life amid all this crisis, because it's hard. It's hard. It's frightening and it's hard. And my thoughts are with all of you as you're dealing with all of this in your own way. One way folks are trying to maintain as much of the status quo as possible is through remote work, shutting down the offices and having everyone work from home, which can be stressful, you know, when everyone's there, your family, your kids are home from school, things can get a little crazy, especially if you or your business weren't really equipped to go remote to begin with, right? We've been talking about remote work for years now and the benefits it offers for both businesses and employees, but still a lot of businesses just hadn't made the switch. And then the coronavirus comes along and suddenly everyone was forced to go remote. That's just another layer of stress on top of everything else. So yeah, it's not an easy time for anyone. But my guest this week is going to help us sort out some of this craziness. She is Tina Garza. Tina is owner and quote unquote chief number cruncher at Accounting Pros. That's a leading small business bookkeeping and payroll service. She's also an ambassador in the greater Denver area for the accounting software company Xero. And she presented a webcast last year for Xero that centered on running a remote workforce. And she's got some great advice, great guidance for businesses and employees alike. We'll get to that here in just a moment. First, a quick reminder, this week's show is brought to you by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So yeah, whether you were ready or not, chances are, depending on what you do, you're probably working remotely. In fact, Time Magazine called the coronavirus the world's largest work from home experiment. And I can't say that I disagree with that. And some good news is that there's no shortage of advice out there. There have been tons of articles and newsletters in recent weeks offering advice for business leaders and remote workers. Here's one. It's an article from Gallup, of all places, titled COVID-19 Has My Teams Working Remotely? A Guide for Leaders. And it's written by Gallup senior editor Jennifer Robison. Here are just a few bits of remote wisdom from Robison. She says, the best managers have always individualized their coaching to the worker, but doing so at a distance requires greater intentionality. Managers need to ask each team member to describe the conditions under which they perform best, their concerns about their workflow, and their emotional response to the situation. Robison also says this. She says, about half of all U.S. employees, remote or not, don't know what's expected of them at work. That's a bad beginning, and it'll get worse for employees sent home without good guidance. So managers must make expectations crystal clear. And she says, communication has to be a top priority. Here's what she writes. She writes, employees who are accustomed to working in-house may feel cut off from the resources, information, or relationships they need to do their jobs well. So plan for more conference calls. Your staff needs to hear from you too, especially as economic fears worsen, to maintain their trust in leadership. End quote. So good advice there for leaders and for employees. Well, there's a ton of advice out there for them as well, some of which we'll talk about here in just a minute. I can throw in some of advice of my own. I've been a full-time remote worker for nearly 15 years now. I'm chief communications officer for the Maryland Association of CPAs, but I work from my home in St. Louis, Missouri, which we fondly call the Midwest branch, the MACPA. And I guess my one bit of advice above all others is to, you know, take care of yourself, particularly when it comes to the amount of time you spend working. And I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to this stuff. Occasionally, when you work from home, it can be real easy to overwork yourself because your home is now your office, right? And it's great to be able to work anytime you need to, but what you don't want to do is work all the time. And I'm talking about nights and weekends and holidays. I've done all that, believe me. And I've had to remind myself from time to time to cut it out. You know, we have to work hard to set those boundaries, to leave the office at a reasonable time and make sure your home is still your home, you know? So for what that's worth. But my guest this week has a ton of great advice of her own, Tina Garza with Accounting Pros. How do we effectively work and lead in a remote first mindset in this isolated world of COVID-19? Tina's got some great ideas, great advice, great guidance here that comes at a time when we really, really need it. Here is my conversation with Tina Garza. Tina, thanks for joining me today. So I guess my first question is, how are you? How are things in, you know, your little corner of the coronavirus world?
Yeah, so I'm doing well, thankfully, and all my team is doing well. We all work remotely, so we all were already, you know, sort of self-quarantined, right. And no one has been traveling too far from home recently, which is great. Very challenging for my clients right now, but we're working with them really diligently to make sure that they have a plan of action to survive any economic downfall that may come their way.
Well, that's good to know. You know, we're doing this interview remotely, of course, because, yeah, you know, of course we are. tell me about your own remote journey. How long have you been working remotely? When did all that kind of start?
Yeah, so I started to fall in love with the idea of working remotely a long time ago. I was studying at a Buddhist monastery, and a lot of people were traveling internationally and were working while they were studying. And I thought, that's a kind of freedom that I'd really like to have, which is geographic freedom. And so my goal with Accounting Pros was to offer that. And initially, we started off working in an office because I didn't really know how to make that happen. It felt like it was a dream that I wanted to go for, but I didn't really have the method to get there. And, you know, we were using QuickBooks on a hosted server, trying to find ways again to disperse. I think it all really got a lot easier for us when we switched over to Xero because it's a completely online accounting platform. And also when I decided to move from Phoenix to Denver. I was living in Phoenix for a long time, and Denver really called me. And so I thought, well, let's see if we can make this work. And it was a lot of time in the very beginning where it didn't work really right. I didn't have the systems in place. I didn't really have a process for it. And so it felt a lot harder than it should have been. And if I had just done that at the outset, it would have made my life a lot easier. But we actually started this, Accounting Pros was started in 2010. In 2013-ish is when we started to go fully remote. And so now I have 17 accountants and we're all over the United States. I even had one accountant in Canada formerly. And we all work from home or from co-working spaces, but we use our systems and processes to communicate and to get things done and make sure that no stone is left unturned.
Wow, that's great. So, tell me what was the biggest challenge for you as you were trying to get this remote situation set up? Was it technology? Was it processes? What was the biggest hurdle for you to get over?
So for me, technology and processes go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty simple to run an office. I mean, it's never simple, but when you can walk over to somebody's desk and say, you know, hey, can I ask you a question about this? Let's walk through this. And to just get a pulse or a read on how the project is going, it's a lot simpler, you know, just to walk 10 steps than it is to figure out systems if you don't know how those systems work. Right. So for me, it was understanding what is available on the market. So what can I use to communicate? What can I do to track? What do I need to make sure that I'm checking up on, you know, on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis? And how does it all kind of fit together? And, you know, we have a really big software suite, and it's slowly being tailored down into like some really key component parts. But for me, it was getting a really solid project management system in place, and then an internal communication system, an external communication system. And so that really solved the problem of, you know, what are my people up to? What's due? What do I need to be worrying about? And are we able to communicate with our clients effectively and make sure that we're not missing anything?
Yeah. So I'm sure you're aware, we've been talking about remote work in this profession now for years. Yeah. Some accountants and finance pros have kind of made that leap and done it very well. Others haven't.
Right.
They just haven't for whatever reason. And now we're, you know, so here we are at a point in time where we're all kind of being forced to do it. So what's some of the best advice that you can offer business leaders for how to, I guess, A, get things set up, and then we can talk about leading a remote workforce in a second, but how do you, you know, especially for people who are struggling to get this thing up and running on a really quick basis, what's some of the best advice that you can offer them?
So I think the biggest thing that that holds people up is where the processes currently live. And those processes are normally sitting inside someone's head. And it could be the business owner, it could be your accountants. And if the only thing that you can do over the next couple of weeks while you're trying to figure out what's next is pull processes out of people's heads and start to put it on paper, that will project you forward way further than anything else. You can start, you know, like grasping at software and trying to figure out what's going to fix me. But if you don't actually know what your process is, or nobody agrees in the process, then you're just kind of grabbing for straws. So before anything else, make sure that you have a really solid understanding of what you do and how you do it currently.
That's a great starting point. And as far as what are some, I mean, you've got a fairly, would you say 17 people working for you?
Yep. All we have remotely? 17 people. Yeah.
Advice for managing a group like that when you're all scattered around the country or the world in your case, what's some advice or best practices that you could offer for how to manage a remote workforce?
So in managing a remote workforce, I think the biggest thing is understanding expectations. So again, if we don't document our process, we don't tell somebody how to do it, then they never really know, you know, what they're doing right or wrong. And so if you can give people really solid expectations, then that's a good starting point. With us as well, we have all in our project management system, we use Teamwork. We have, you know, some tasks will be one time, sometimes they'll recur daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly. And so in looking at somebody's project, I can quickly see who's outstanding and who's not, who's got things that are due and who's not. And in addition to that, we have really solid teams. So on our team, and we have three separate teams. We've got a controller and then a set of bookkeepers and an admin. And then we also have an onboarding team as well, who kind of hops into that team to do all the onboarding work and then hops out to kind of feed them their work. But during that whole process, we're documenting the processes and we're holding each other accountable. So the controller is always reviewing the onboarder's work or the ongoing accountant's work to make sure that nothing is missed. And for us, having two sets of eyes on the file really helps to maintain any fear of things going wrong, like, you know, deadlines being missed or things being inputted incorrectly. And we have a really extensive checklist for both onboarding and ongoing to make sure that we're checking things off and that nothing's, you know, nobody's forgetting about anything. And it's probably because I'm super type A that these kind of things have happened. But it's also every process that we put in place is because something has broken along the way. So my other advice would be, if you don't have a team, you know, that like how we have it set up, or you don't have these checklists and things like that, it's not the end of the world. You can build on them. And then the idea is to continue to iterate over time. If you notice that there's a flaw in the process, then together as a team, need to identify what the root cause is and then apply a solution to it together so that everybody feels like they have a say and that they're all on board with the end solution.
Anything that you can offer from a management point of view, your how you interact you know, individually with people, how often, what works for you? What kind of best practices have you seen there as far as like a manager employee relationship goes?
Yeah. So, our teams individually meet on Mondays. So the controller will lead the meeting and make sure that they know that the team knows what expectations are for the week and what the biggest priorities are for the week. And then at the end of the week, I have a meeting with the entire team and talk about the state of affairs of the economy, things that are going on with our clients, things that we all need to be paying attention to. So my role is more, you know, visionary and leadership right now and making sure that everybody is on the same page. But the controllers are really guiding the work of the ongoing and onboarding accountants to make sure that things are checked off. And then I have a director of operations as well, who's also acting on like an HR person. So if we have some certain expectations for coming in on time, for example, you have to be at the office, at your office, or online and available at 8 hours of your choosing between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Okay. And the reason that we do that is because our clients expect us to be available to them and to answer the phone and emails. And if we're working odd hours and treating it like it's like gig work, then our clients are going to take us seriously. So we give people the latitude to decide their hours, but our director of operations is holding them accountable if they're not checked in and on Slack. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, I'm looking at their utilization and timing. So I'm not of the school where people don't keep time sheets. I know that that's kind of a trend right now, but all of our projects have an expected budget, a time budget, and a dollar budget. They also have you know, time tracking in our system. And so I'm looking at, you know, are we on point with our time budgets? Are we going over? Are our employees utilized fully or not? And that's not always black and white. It could be that the client is going out of scope if we're over time, which means that it's an opportunity to recoup some of that income. It could also be a teaching opportunity for our clients if they need some extra help in delivering us information. It could also be teaching for my employees if they need to have a better understanding of a process or how something works internally. And so it's not like micromanaging, it's more guiding people along the way. And then for me, my goal is that everybody is 80% utilized, which means that 20% of their time, you know, is not spent on directly on client work. So they're not feeling overwhelmed at any given time.
Right. No, that's great advice. From an employee side, what should the individual employees be doing to kind of make this transition go as smoothly as possible?
So some of the biggest problems that I've had with people working remotely is not setting really clear boundaries in their own home. And usually it's things like, you know, partners, like spouses or husbands or boyfriends or wives, you know, kind of jumping in and wanting to hang out instead of doing work because they're like, oh, my partner is here, let's talk. And so really deciding like, this is my work time, I love you, but I need to do my work. And really setting that boundary is a challenge at first, but after you do it for a while, it becomes easier. Kids are a little bit harder. So having adequate support in your home, especially right now, since a lot of daycares are closed, making sure that you're kind of handing things off with a partner if you have one is great. I mean, I was a single mother for a really long time, so I don't know what I would do in that situation. It's really hard because my son was very, very high energy when he was a kid. But maybe finding a friend or something to come over to help. Also, pets can be really hard to, you know, to manage. So those are the kind of things that I think are big challenges. The other stuff is setting up a comfortable space. And I don't recommend working from a kitchen table or a couch. I mean, that's nice to kind of transition to when you'd like a change of scenery, but have a desk to sit at, have a comfortable chair to sit on, you know, have a quiet area, have all of your tools ready for you. So second screen, laptop, keyboard, whatever you need. So that way it feels like you're at work. You're not just kind of hanging out at home with your laptop. Right. It really changes your mindset. And for me, every day I dress like I'm going to work. I have all my work clothes on. I know I'm more like a business casual and I've got like a really comfy sweater on, but I'm not working in my pajamas. I feel like if I'm working in my pajamas, my mind is there.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I look good, I feel good. And that kind of projects outward. People take me more seriously and I feel more like, you know, like it's a regular day.
Yeah. Yeah. So treat it almost like the office.
Yeah. Know. Yeah. And, you know, we still make time for chit chat and things like that. We use Slack to communicate with internally. Yep. So we're doing things like sending videos and memes and kind of being goofy and just talking about stuff. So you don't have to completely isolate. There's still ways to feel like you're connected. And this Zoom is an excellent way to meet with your peers. You know, having that face-to-face humanizes the relationship with your peers. You're not just looking at like an email that doesn't have any personality.
Right.
And for me, you know, I'm a really social person. I'm an introvert, extrovert, so like an ambivert, yeah, you know, yeah. And having this connection really makes me feel whole.
Yeah. Yeah. It does add an element of connection that you don't get otherwise. I mean, I've been working remotely since 2005, so gone on 15 years now. And that was a big challenge initially way back then. The technology hadn't really caught up with it, you know, and now we've got tools available today that we didn't have back then that just make it so much easier to stay connected.
Yeah. I mean, there's even tools that are new, you know, within the last couple of years. So I'll give you kind of a funny thing that we do. We have a gift exchange every year, and I have to look at the name of the company, but we actually were able to kind of choose a few gifts or some general themes of what we liked. And we did a Secret Santa exchange. And we didn't have to get in front of each other and hand each other gifts. We just sent them by Amazon. Mm-hmm. All the, you know, and it was a fun way. We sat in front of a screen. We did a big Zoom. We opened our presents. We were like, look at me. I got a, you know, a Bob Ross chia pet. It was just a fun, it was a fun way to have that kind of connection that you normally would get in an office.
Yeah.
But we're working so, you know, at a distance. So it's would be really expensive to get together, and it just would take too much time, and people want to, you know, don't want to travel for something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I feel like after all this time doing this, working from my home, that I've kind of got a rhythm to my day, a flow, so to speak. I've been, you know, doing this long enough that I feel like I know what works well for me and what I need to do my job. But, you know, for someone who's brand new to it, for whom, you know, remote work is a new thing, what would you say to them in terms of guidance about how to make this adjustment as quickly, but also as efficiently and effectively as they can?
So I think a big problem, there's the assumption that when you work from home, you're going to be lazy, you're not going to get anything done, you're going to be doing laundry all day. There's actually a really powerful study done by Stanford that investigated a company called C-Trip. They actually looked at, I think it was 20,000 employees. They were thinking about expanding offices, and they decided, we're going to send 50% of the people home and see how this works. It's like a big experiment. And they were actually 13% more productive over the course of the experiment. So I'm happy to send you a link to share with your audience.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So there's that assumption, you know, you're just going to be eating Cheetos and watching cartoons all day, which is absolutely not true for 99.99% of people. There's always going to be that 0.0001%. But the real problem is not knowing when to turn off. Mm. So, you know, you start, you roll out of bed, you know, you're in your PJs, you sit at your desk eating your cereal or whatever. You work all day long because there's no boundaries. And then you roll out of your desk and you go to bed and you have dinner and that's it. And that's not a really effective way of running your day, because you're not doing anything to feed yourself, like internally. So you have to find time, if you're into exercise, you know, to go for a walk or go to the gym. You need to pursue your hobbies in your spare time. And so having a schedule is incredibly important. For me, I wake up at the same time every day. I do a little bit of yoga. I have some coffee. I hang out with my cat. I do some emails, and then my day starts. You know, I just, it's quiet in the morning. It helps me kind of prepare myself for the day. And then I shut off at the same time. Normally I go to the gym. Unfortunately, gyms around me are closed right now, so I'm doing a home routine. Mm-hmm. But I have that time because that's the time that feeds me. Yep. I need an hour to myself where I can just, you know, let it all out, get rid of the day's stress, and then come back and feel recharged for dinner and for time with my family. And I go to bed around the same time every night. So the routine, you know, sounds a little bit boring, you know, because you're kind of doing things in a structured way, but that routine keeps you from becoming a person who just works and that's it. You know, that's the only thing that's on your mind.
Yeah.
So whatever it is that you're into, find time for that.
Yep. Yeah, so this entire situation that we all find ourselves in right now, it's a hardship for a lot of people. But I guess, are there opportunities here that we're not seeing yet? How do we turn the situation to our advantage going forward?
So If you're not currently working remotely, or you haven't done it previously, and this is your first go at it, this is an opportunity to figure out how to make it work for you and your team. And this could potentially cut costs overall. So if you're looking at reducing office space, it's not just the office space that you're reducing. It's office, electricity, and it's the drive. A typical commute is 45 minutes each way to work. And if you can relieve that that burden from someone's life, you might be able to attract better talent, which is what people, you know, millennials and other younger generations are seeking. They don't want to have to go to an office to work in the traditional way. So you open up a lot of opportunity for talent that you might not have already had. And for me, I'm finding really talented people. I call them accounting unicorns across the United States, which I wouldn't necessarily be able to find in one spot. So from an HR and an internal cost-cutting perspective, eliminating the office or at least reducing the reliance on the office can open up a lot of potential. And really, I think this for us, even though it's really challenging for our clients economically right now, we work with people who rely on foot traffic in the door to make their money. I think this is a great way to think creative, or a great time to think creatively about revenue. So I'll give you an example. I have a client of mine who, they have a bar and a crafting. It's called Upstairs Circus. They're awesome if they're in your hometown. And when they open up again, please go. You can have craft cocktails. You can make crafts at the same time. So we made like a leather wristlet last time I was there. So it's really cool, but they do need people to come in the door. And I was sitting with one of my accountants that was working on their file the other day. And I thought, well, I'm a member of this organization or a subscription box called Let's Make Art. Have you ever heard of Let's Make Art?
I have not, no.
Okay, so I want to learn how to paint. I'm awful at art, but it's really soothing and I love it. So I have a glass of wine and I watch this woman on YouTube and she sells you a kit with watercolor paint and you just kind of follow along. And at the end, you have a cool piece of art. I won't show you them because it looks like a kindergartner did it, but for me, it feels great. And I thought, well, in this case, like maybe they could do that. Maybe we should suggest to our client that they start a subscription box and then maybe include a recipe for a cocktail or something. Mm-hmm. So this isn't something that means the death of a company. It could mean innovation and change. Mm-hmm. And for me as well, I'm also looking at clients and learning and trying to help them promote their brand online, which helps me, earn trust with them. And also helps my audience understand what my clients do and brings people together. So we're building a community. For example, I have a client that's an MSP, which is a managed service provider. They do like manage IT work for big companies. And talking about remote work, not every company can use the systems that we use because their industry requires certain things, certain tools to use. And so having an interview with this MSP, Agilitech, tomorrow will open up a whole new world for somebody who might have thought that remote work was not for them. And so if you can dig into your client base, figure out how to connect people, help promote what people do, and then come up with really creative ideas, you'll number one, look at like a trusted advisor because you are advising them. And number two, it helps your clients stay in business longer. And the other opportunity that we have right now is really advisory. So if your clients don't have enough money to sustain themselves, it's partially your fault because you need to make sure that you're advising your clients of how much they need on hand to be able to survive any downturn, whether it's a loss of a big client, a pandemic, or maybe even losing a portion of their staff or something like that. So if you're not giving them the tools to be successful, then they are going to fail or have a higher potential to fail. So now is the time to dig into your client list, look at their books, really scrutinize what's going on, and deliver really exceptional value so they don't see you as a line item on their profit and loss. They see you as an asset to their company.
That's some great messages right there. So, favorite remote tools or resources? What are some of the things that you can't do without?
Yeah, so we talked about process documentation. There's an exceptional tool called Trainual. And what you do is essentially create a training manual online, and you can have videos and quizzes and text and everything. It's amazing because you can put together a package for each different role in your company. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly inexpensive and super easy to turn on. We also have used Thinkific to deliver video courses. That's a really good one. We use Teamwork, like their entire suite of their software. So Teamwork Projects is good for one-time and recurring projects. Their desk module is all ticketing, so we have all of our communication come in, you know, one channel. And then they have a help desk as well, where you can look up articles and things like that. Let's see, we use Zoom a lot to communicate with our clients. We also use Slack internally to talk and chat, and you know, just it's all internal. So there's a lot of joking going on there. So it helps to really build the camaraderie. We use Xero for our online accounting solution and Gusto for our payroll. And that was a really strategic and important choice for us, because if it wasn't for Xero and Gusto, we wouldn't have grown at the rate that we have. The clients that we get that are interested in Xero and Gusto are more forward-thinking and are less likely to say, come to my office and do this work, which is impossible right now. So if you haven't checked them out, please do. Formstack is great for creating like online checklists. So we have, you know, our internal review process kind of through that, and we can send things back and forth there and keep a log of the quality of somebody's work. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, we use a lot of different tools, and I can put them all down on paper, but I think the big one is really the project management and document process management. Oh, Receipt Bank is great. Box is great. We use those as well. Those are really good too for people who are in industries that require a lot of, you know, paper. Mm-hmm. So we're in Colorado where cannabis is legal, and there is a requirement for keeping 6 months of any documents for your business on hand for an auditor to produce at any given time. And if you don't, I believe the minimum fine is $20,000. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So we give all of our cannabis clients Receipt Bank. We give them crazy trainings on how to do it, and all that ties to the different software we use. So it, you know, goes into Gusto, it can go into Xero. And for us, having that sort of redundancy is great in case somebody goes down. We've always got the ability to pull information.
Fantastic. Well, this has been really helpful. Great guidance, great advice, Tina. Thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I hope that you guys have learned something. Please reach out to me if you need anything. I'm open to help any accountant who has questions, because I know this is a very challenging time, but a lot of opportunities are here as well. So please reach out.
Fantastic. Thank you. So that was great. That was Tina Garza, owner and chief number cruncher at Accounting Pros. That's a leading small business bookkeeping and payroll service. She's also an ambassador in the greater Denver area for the accounting software company Xero. And you can learn more about Tina at accountingpros.com. That's accountingpros, P-R-O-S-E.com. And you can learn more about all of this at macpa.org. We've got a bunch of coronavirus-related guidance for businesses and employees, for CPAs, too, who are working from home but still need their CPE. It's all there. It's all on our blog, macpa.org/blog. Also, if you want to know more about remote work strategies specifically, check out the blog post for this podcast, episode 93 of Future Proof. It's on blionline.org/blog. Links to a lot of great resources there. Good stuff for leaders and employees alike. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future ready skills now. We got all the time in the world on our hands, don't we? So start mastering those future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And finally, folks, just, you know, stay safe, stay well, stay at home, please. And we will get through this. Have a great week, gang. Talk to you again next week.